All right, good morning. Welcome back to Unshaken Discipleship Podcast. So good to be here, and we are done with chapter 6. That was
heavy chapter.
That was a tough one. Yeah, heavy chapter. On sexualizing the children. And today we move into chapter 7, which is talking about capitalism as the disease and socialism is the cure. Supposedly, you it's know, cure. What yeah, many yeah. of the secularists are calling to be the cure. So let's jump right in, Bob. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, like I said, I think this is a real, especially for the younger kids, because socialism, basically, as he says, you might be surprised at the number of people advocating socialism who do not know how to define it.
Yeah.
For them, it is summed up by one word, free. And we've seen our government from COVID, but leading into COVID, begin to slowly give handouts, so to speak.
Stimulus checks, yeah.
So socialism would provide free college, and you saw what Joe Biden did, forgive debts, all student debts, which how do you do that without somebody having to pay that, which is the taxpayers. Yeah. I don't care what anybody, it's going to fall on taxpayers. You talk about billions of dollars of college loans being forgiven.
Yeah.
How does that work? It doesn't. Free health care, that doesn't work. It never works. Free retirement income, a guaranteed job and a decent living. Allegedly, in a socialist world, no one would be left behind because the government would assure income equality. Let me read something, I printed it up by Republican Dan Crenshaw, that explains why socialism doesn't work. And he does it, and he says this: socialism doesn't work because it removes human incentive, and we actually need incentives in our lives. Mm-hmm. We engage in economic activity, we produce things, we work because there is some kind of reward at the end. That's basic human nature. Socialism goes against that basic human nature. So how does socialism actually reach its end goal? Well, it forces people to work, take their wages, infringes on their freedom, make people do what the government wants them to do for the sake of the commune. Never actually works. It always ends up in despair. And if people would do their research, they can look at all those countries that are either under socialist or communist rule, and you see how the people live. They're in poverty. In the book, if you read, he talks about what happened in Venezuela, that at one time was such a prospering and a country. Now, after Hugo Chavez went in there and changed the whole government from a capitalistic to socialism, you saw what happened.
Yeah.
Collapses. So,
yeah.
And that in itself, and when you're getting money, especially money dumped in your account, whether debit, direct deposit, or you get a check, then it's very appealing, because it takes the responsibility out of your hands to work and to produce a source of income and living for yourself. And that's what socialism does. But that's what appears on the outside. But we know that I was in Bulgaria for a mission trip, and I stayed in an apartment complex Bulgaria was under 500 years of Marxist rule. And you go in there, and everything is exactly the same. Because what they do is they strip you of your identity. They take any identity away from you. So every apartment, and I was with about a team of about 25 people, and I went into every apartment, like a bed and breakfast, but I went in, when I was there, exactly the same. Everything. Furniture, you go in there. I mean, decorations, yes, but as far as the furnishing, the living conditions, exactly the same. And what they do is they strip you of your identity.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, so what?
Everything is the same.
Yeah, and I don't, and like I said, the younger generation, we know that to be true. We've got jobs coming out of our ears of available jobs, but nobody wants to work. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you just know, Governor Ige, right?
Yep.
Just gave you supposedly a tax rebate if you filed your taxes by and for a direct deposit.
Yep.
Then you got $300 per person in your family dumped into your account. If you filed by mail, then they send you a paper check.
Yep.
But from what? He says it's a tax rebate, but he didn't explain in what sense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, again, as we have our state government filtering money back to people, I think it might have been, this is just my own thought, but the fact that our state got a ton of money for the COVID relief, which we know that he didn't unload a lot of that money, maybe this is what he's doing so that he doesn't find this favor with the federal government. Well, what did you do with all the money we gave you for COVID relief when COVID hit? So that's just my thoughts. I could be totally wrong. But I just thought out of nowhere, he announced that he's going to give $300 rebate to families that pay taxes.
Yep.
I'm thinking, really?
and he mentions this in page 194. I don't want to get too ahead, but he says, with every step the U.S. takes in the direction of socialism, there will be more calls for equal distribution of wealth. More politicians will begin to promise, make these promises of free money.
Yep.
Why? So that they can get elected.
Yep.
And then more regulations will follow. Once a government goes down that path, it's almost impossible to reverse course.
And that's true.
And this is where we are.
And we're heading that way.
Our president, doing all these free handouts and so is our governor for the state of Hawaii.
And we not only that, we see how things where the gas prices were at one time coming down for what they said 13, 14 straight weeks.
Yep.
I just talked to my sister-in-law in California. They've had the highest 1 week increase since they started dropping. The gas in California now is almost $6 a gallon.
Wow.
When it was going down, they were seeing decreases in the gas per gallon at the pumps. Now they're going back up. And what's the cause? Well, again, blaming it on climate change. Now, I don't want to discredit that there has something to do with some changes because of climate change, but not to the extent to where it's putting such a crimp on our economy.
Hmm.
Like they're saying, we got to get rid of gas cars.
Yeah, yep. And we're going to talk about that too, right? Because they're really pushing this climate change, the Green New Deal.
Yep.
And
I don't want to get angry.
One of the guys in the church several months back, went on a 2 week trip, and he has a Tesla business, and you saw him. I brought it to church several times. And basically car sitting, and never driven a Tesla before, but it was an interesting experience, and I could easily see this being the future of vehicles, right? And car ownership is okay. It's got to be electric, and just the constraints it puts on you, and having to charge the vehicle, even Pastor Daryl had mentioned a while back too. You crunch the numbers, and you're really not saving much money.
You're not
compared to gas.
Yeah, I just talked to. I'm doing premarital counseling with an older couple. He works for stevedores, and one of the things he did was unloading a bunch of these electric car batteries.
Mm.
But also, he knows all the stats and what it takes to make one of those things and the cost to make one. And he said it's crazy how much money, of course, the public doesn't understand or realize the amount that it could spend to make one of these batteries, but also the amount of pollution in a different sense that goes into the air when they're manufacturing these batteries.
Yep.
And so you saw what happened in Cali, right? Where they've had a heat wave, they've had no rain.
Mm.
But they've got a lot of people with electric cars there, where Gavin Newsom shut down the electric pumps and told people you can't charge your cars because of they were having rolling blackouts because of the heat there.
Yeah.
Right now, their temperature in Cali right now, I just talked to my dad, it's over 100 degrees. So it's almost like a catch-22. And I don't buy into all of their what they're saying, the reason why.
Yep.
It's just, we have to go this direction because of the way the climate is changing, because of gas. I know, that's baloney. I don't believe any of that stuff. So anyway.
So let's talk about what socialism is actually and why, it impedes on our freedom and the freedom of the church, especially. So he says on 178, that socialism by its very nature encroaches on the freedom of the church and its ability to be generous with gospel ministries.
Yep.
The United States must be thanked for the more than $400 billion its citizens give each year to charitable causes, including missions and helping the poor. You can't name a socialist country that comes anywhere near to America's generosity. No. And why is that? Because America is not, at least in the present day, is not a socialist country.
No.
We are,
and you, if you
founded
think,
in capitalism.
Yeah, if you think about it, why the church now, evangelicals, is such a target by our government and by the progressive left, simply because we encroach upon their desire to see our country move more and more to this government control.
Yeah.
And the church won't bend under those type of premises simply because of what you just read about how we help out missions and people that are in need. Like we just, this Hurricane Ian that just slammed Florida.
Yep.
You can bet you're going to have a lot of nonprofit, especially churches over there, mm-hmm. to lend support to help them recover, whether through preaching the gospel, water, food, blankets, supplies, rebuilding.
Yep.
Socialism doesn't do that.
Yeah.
They could care less.
Yep.
It's all about the money. It's all about them getting the money. So that's why you see in a lot of these countries, they're just left in shambles.
Wasn't there a hurricane a few years back, I think, that rolled through, it was either Cuba or Dominican Republic, and they're, you know.
Cuba right now.
They have not even recovered to this day.
Cuba right now, the whole country is without power. Right now from Hurricane Fiona that hit Puerto Rico and Bermuda, the whole country has no power.
Yeah.
So how do you? I mean, to me, it's almost despairing. You feel so much despair because it's the people suffer. Mm. The government, they take care of their own business, but the people suffer.
Yep.
And that's socialism because there's no outsource of income to be able to rebuild stuff like that. Right? There's no money.
Yep.
That's the thing they bring up here. So what happens when you run out of income of distribution to the people who are under this premise?
Exactly. And it's happened. You know, history has shown this in some of these socialist countries. And so in a nutshell, what is socialism? It's the supremacy of the state over the individual, mm-hmm. right? Where the government takes ownership of the means of production, makes promises to redistribute wealth in what is claimed to be, keyword claimed to be, mm-hmm. A fair-minded way.
Yep.
And who decides what is fair and what is not? And therein lies the problem.
The person who sits on the throne in the socialist government. He makes the rules, he calls the shots, and if you don't like it, then you face execution. I mean, there is no solution if you don't bend and buckle under what they want to accomplish mm-hmm. within the perspective of the socialist rule. I mean, just like when you read at the bottom, it says, we remember the Occupy Wall Street movement, whose slogan can be summed up, let Wall Street pay. It seems like an option that is too good to pass up. So, again, you're taking money that is not yours, rightfully yours. You didn't earn it.
Yep.
But they feel their whole concept is the rich are the reason why we have poor in the country.
Yeah.
The land. That's they blame it on the rich.
Yep. Page 180. let's read that.
Sure.
The basic economic axiom of Marxism is that the poor are poor. Why? Because the rich are rich. Capitalists are the oppressors. The poor are the victims. I think we talked about this in a previous chapter, right? And because the rich will not share their wealth voluntarily, which they do many times.
Exactly.
The only just course is to confiscate private property, let the state redistribute wealth and benefits. And you know what's interesting is on Wednesday nights, I'm facilitating a financial peace class, right?
Yeah.
With Dave Ramsey's course.
Uh-huh.
And just last night, he threw out a statistic that 89% of millionaires in America are not millionaires because of inheritance. And I was watching that and listening to that. I'm thinking, wow,
they were
never given money. Why? Because they were just very diligent
in
their finances. They worked hard. Yeah. They made sure to save, and over time, the money grows. Right.
Yeah. Most of the people they're not Christian, but guys like Bill Gates, you know, Steve Jobs. I mean, they worked hard.
Yeah.
In the field of their technology or their what they were skilled at, but they built an empire, but wasn't inherited. They just put in the labor, they put in the work, they put in the hard effort,
mm-hmm.
and the dividends paid off. That's why people love coming to America, because it is free enterprise. You have the opportunity to better your life by putting in what is necessary to improve quality of life for yourself, whether it's school. But that's in America. America is the only country in the world that affords that type of opportunity.
Yeah, the opportunities.
Exactly.
And that's why people flock to this country. But it's interesting that the notion oftentimes is, well, you're a millionaire because your parents were, and you inherited a large fortune, you know, because it was passed down to you from generation to generation, which, you know, statistics show that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, that's an exception.
Yeah, yeah, very, very small percentage.
Even if you look at people, let's take the place that is most recognizable where people make millions of dollars as athletes. Mm-hmm. But they've got to pay their dues.
Yep.
They practice, they put in the hard work, they go to college, they try to excel in the sport that they are good at, and they get the dividends because of the effort they put in. Now, are they overpaid? Yeah. But the bottom line, yeah, they're overpaid. But the bottom line is, it wasn't handed to them on a silver platter. They worked hard to get to their status where they're at.
Right.
You know, so. Right.
And almost every time I see a lot of these black athletes, especially when they sign these huge contracts, it's an emotional time because they know that this is something that's going to create change for them and their families for generations to come.
And some of their backgrounds, you see some of them growing up. I mean, they're single family home, lived in the projects, but just did the hard work because they didn't want to have family and themselves to stay in that situation. So they worked hard and you know, God bless them. I mean, they like I said, are they overpaid? Yeah. But you know, it is what it is. But the point we're making is the fact that they wasn't something they inherited.
Right.
They earned that right to get that salary.
And it's a really neat story. Yeah. A lot of the time seeing them go from poverty to now, you know, success. So.
Yeah. It says, and then if going on at 180 near the bombs, is capitalism, we're told, is based on greed. Socialism is based on need. And it's like, wow. It's almost oxymoron. To me, socialism is based on greed. It's that you're taking from the rich to distribute to the poor. That's greed.
Yeah. And are they really doing what they say they're going to do?
No.
That's the part two, right?
As we go on in the book, remember what Hugo Chavez did, right?
Yep.
Made all the promises. If you elect me president... And he brought in, as we know, socialists, but then we saw what happened in the end.
Yeah.
And how the country is now devastated.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's corruption at its finest.
Yep.
I wanted to turn to Galatians chapter 6 really quickly here. Paul, writing to the church in Galatia, he says in Galatians 6, starting in verse 7, Don't be misled. You cannot mock the justice of God. You will always harvest what you plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other versions, other translations say, whatever a man sows, that he will reap. Those who live only to satisfy their own sinful nature will harvest decay and death from that sinful nature. But those who live to please the Spirit will harvest everlasting life from the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not get tired of doing what is good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing. If we don't give up. Mm-hmm. Therefore, whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone, especially to those in the family of faith. So now, you know, not taking this out of context, but we can draw application from this passage when it comes to finances and being good stewards of our money. And if we, you know, are diligent, you know, if we work hard, like you said, then we will reap a harvest.
Yep.
But the problem with Marxism and socialism is that if everybody goes in with the expectation that I'm getting something no matter what, then they're not gonna work hard. There's no incentive to actually put your hands to the plow and actually go to work.
Well, yeah, because this, as the Governor Crenshaw said, it takes human incentive completely out of the way when you're under a socialist type of rule.
Right.
Because there is no incentive.
The lazy get lazier.
All the hard work you do, there is no reward at the end.
Yeah.
Because you're working for the government.
Right.
That's the bottom line. So, and that's why Christianity, I mean, if you think about it, Jesus said it best in Acts, right? 20:35, it is more blessed to give than to receive.
Mm-hmm.
So the point of the matter is that is the perspective. And I think when God prospers us, let's say, and specifically in the way of finances, we know that if we have a good heart and we become good stewards, as we know scripturally, you can never outgive God.
Yeah.
And we never give with the incentive that to get it replaced, to get back.
Mm-hmm.
We give simply because that's what God's placed within our heart.
Right.
You know, the generosity, the fact that we know what God did for us. You know, so that's why you support organizations like Compassion International, far-reaching ministries, you know. Things
Samaritan's
like that.
Purse.
Samaritan's Purse. You do that simply because it's satisfying to know that what you're doing, you're being an extension and outreach of God's hands to help those that are less fortunate.
Right.
So you went to the Philippines, you know, you saw those conditions there in the Philippines and how much of a joy that when we were going into the sorry stands and buying the candies and giving them to the kids.
Yeah.
Little simple things like that for us is like, not a big deal. But when you see the joy upon kids that don't have the luxury to have that because they don't have the money, that's a satisfaction because you know that you're showing love in action. You're showing care. And that's why Christianity is the only, to me, the remedy for America and all the troubles we're going through. We got to get back to the basics within this country. Exactly.
Yeah.
Will we is a question. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the big question. Will we?
Yeah. And I think it's worth mentioning that those who claim to be Christians but are part of the prosperity gospel and prosperity teachings, why do they give? They're motivated to give because they're convinced in their own minds that they're gonna receive back, I don't know, tenfold.
Yeah, they use the common phrase "sow your seed," and with the perspective that God's going to water that seed, it's going to grow, and you're going to receive back, you know, tenfold, a hundredfold, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, they don't ever back it up biblically and scripturally where that is theology. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's false teaching.
Yeah.
But they enrich themselves at your expense, and yet you don't get anything in return, which is the opposite of what Christianity is. It's always about giving, not about getting. It's about giving. I mean, yeah, labor's worthy of its wages. But it's fair. It's fairness that is to be, you know, done. Like I was watching, looking some stuff up yesterday about, because I saw a gentleman named Jesse Duplantis, and I was watching this thing, and somebody had donated like $100,000 check. They were doing I think a fundraiser or whatever. If I could have reached the tee, I would have smacked him in the head. I'm sorry. He was like, man, this check's really heavy, and he was basically, I mean, it just broke my heart the way that he was looking at money as if it was something that he deserved, that he deserved this kind of thing. And I'm like, dude, you don't deserve nothing. None of us deserve anything.
Yeah.
We deserve hell.
That's right.
But what God did for us to his son Christ, that's the blessing. Mm-hmm. And if that's all it is in this entire life, that's enough.
That's more than enough.
Knowing that
Ephesians 1. Go to Ephesians 1. Read that chapter. Learn about all the spiritual blessings we received.
Yep.
Under heaven because of Christ.
But, you know, the thing about it that, and when I was watching that and, you know, I started getting really, my mind, I'm thinking, you know, you're sitting there in your church for money and people calling in, giving you all this money, but you're right outside the doors of your church, man. You got people that are in dire need. And yet you are so focused upon money for yourself, money for your ministry. But what about outside the doors of your ministry? That's why Christianity is what it is simply because, like you said, you know, we are the most generous country in the world. No country in the world is able to do what we do to help out other people. And I think part of that is because of the church. You know, all the humanitarian aid we do when in times of need and crisis, whether here or abroad. And yet, if people want to move toward Marxism or socialism, then they're going to be in for a rude awakening when they really see the true opinions of what this is all about. It's almost like when you think about it, it's like in the last days we move into the end times and the Antichrist comes on the scene. They're going to hail this guy as a hero.
Yeah.
He's a lifesaver. He's going to bring prosperity to the country, to people, but then he's going to show his true colors. Well, that's what socialism is going to do.
Yeah.
Same thing.
It works for a time.
Yep.
He says in one of these pages, again, getting a little ahead of ourselves, but it's not sustainable indefinitely. I think on page 183, too, he talks about how capitalism, for many liberals, they put under fire, and they blame capitalism, really, for every evil in contemporary society, right? He says, including greed, materialism, and selfishness, the prevalence of fraudulent behavior, debasement of society's tastes, pollution of the environment, alienation and despair within the society, and the vast disparities of wealth. Even racism and sexism are treated as effects of capitalism. So capitalism is not only the reason for financial inequality, it's the root of America's sexism, white supremacy, xenophobia. Really?
I mean,
these guys will just take it to the furthest extent to try and.
And again, like we talked about in the last chapter, the propaganda. Even though there is no basis to prove what they're saying, if you study U.S. history from its birth and how capitalism became the foundation of what made this country so great, on top of God blessing the fact that we was an open country to bring people here to have the opportunity to have a better life. Mm-hmm. If they go back and study U.S. history, they would see everything they're saying about capitalism, there is no basis for what they're saying. But again, like we said, propaganda. You yell enough and you scream enough about the lie, then like you said, and we saw it last week, they try to make you feel as if you're the one that's misinformed, right? Because of the pressure, like, you know, you're wrong. And then you begin to question, man, am I really wrong? Kind of thing, right? So, but, you know, and the thing that for me, I'm thinking, if you don't like America so much and you're in this aggression to change the country, then go to a country that's a socialist country that totally holds your values and mm-hmm. your beliefs about how we should be run. Why do you stay here for?
Yep.
I mean, I think that, like, if you don't like it here so bad that you think the government's corrupt, that the capitalism is robbing people, creating the poor, where it causes sexism and everything else, like that you just read, then why do you stay here?
Right.
You have the freedom to pack your bags and go elsewhere. Go mm-hmm. to Russia, go to China, go to South America. Yep.
And 4 years ago when Trump became president, how many celebrities, right, came out? Yeah, yeah. Liberals coming out and saying, I'm leaving this country. Yeah. I'm done with the USA.
If he wins the presidency, I'm leaving. Well, you see anybody leave?
Yeah, they're still here.
They're still here. Because they know deep down inside there is no country in the world like America.
Mm-hmm.
No country in the world that gives them the access to and the liberty to do what they do, like these television, you know, like The View. The stuff they say, well, you can only do that here. You go try to say that somewhere else. You end up being put in jail.
That's right.
You don't
if
have
not
that.
Worse.
Yes, you don't have that freedom to express whether political or social views like that, mm-hmm. especially when it goes against the axiom of what the country believes. America, you have that freedom simply because it's called freedom of expression, and yet that's being taken away, little mm-hmm. by little. You know, government's trying to put their ugly claws into everything.
Yeah. Like what he says on 184, the vision of cultural Marxism is in America, an America free of greed, racism, and class structure. As David Horowitz explains, in the radical view, once human beings have been freed from institutional oppressions, their natural goodness asserts itself, and the traditional dilemmas of power no longer exist. It is a future in which social justice prevails, and there are no troubling questions about the dispensations of authority. And then he says, he follows that quote up with, this end justifies every means to get there.
Yeah.
So we're always talking about the end goal or the end result. But yeah, what is it? Was it at what cost?
Yep.
What is it going to take for us to get there? And it's going to come with a lot of consequences.
The bottom line cost would be, if this is fully put into plan, let's say it does, the cost is that you as a people, you have no freedom anymore.
Yep.
Your freedom is stripped.
Yep.
Bottom line, you have no freedom. You don't even have the freedom to speak out. And you speak your mind maybe against certain things that the government is doing that it doesn't mm-hmm. Please you or satisfy you. You don't have that freedom. There is no freedom of expression. There is no freedom of speech. There is no freedom of religion because the government controls everything. Mm-hmm. Look at China. All right? The church is underground.
Yep.
And yet, even though the church is underground, because it is biblical, it is Christian, it continues to thrive. Like he said early in the book, I mean, Christianity will thrive under any government. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's proven itself from the very beginning of time when it was established in Acts. It was under Roman rule at that time, and look at what the church did. And still today, whether in Russia the church is persecuted or even more so in China, even though the church has been driven underground, we see how it continues to thrive because you can't kill something supernatural. Mm-hmm. And that's the beautiful thing about Christianity. It can survive under any type of government, but the point of the matter is, but what about the people that live here? You know, what is it going to be like? So what role will the church have? When or should that fully be implemented before the rapture of the church takes place?
Mm.
You know, that's something that we really have to think about.
Yep.
What role will we have as a ministry, and how much aggression will the government come against us to quiet the things that we want to do, provide, things such as that, right? You know, with transgenderism, the LGBTQ push, you know, will churches be forced to perform same-sex marriages?
Mm-hmm.
Will we be forced to not speak out against things such as that?
It would be an interesting combination of underground.
Yeah.
But yet we're not compromising and we're still bold and doing what God has called us to do. Like
And you know, then that's and we may that's a very likelihood if things continue to digress in the opposite direction, it would be very likely that we would have to go underground, be like home churches, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Meeting in homes and you know, having the secret signals, you know, to make sure you're not being infiltrated by somebody to put you under arrest.
Mm.
Like back in the days, that's how the fish, you know, ISOI, you know, came. They would draw in the sand one half, and if the person was a Christian, they would finish the symbol, say that I'm a Christian. That's where that came from, way back in the New Testament when the church was being persecuted. So it was interesting. So will we have to go through, maybe not to that extreme, but it'll be, it's interesting the concept and a thought to where will we be and what type of changes that we will have to make if the government gets what it wants and pushes toward more of a government rule over everything within our country.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing it right now, little by little.
Yeah, that incrementally. Yeah, incrementally. That's the word that seems to pervade this chapter.
Yep.
Incrementally, little by little, because, you know, to all this change happening at once, they're not going to get away with their agenda.
Yeah, people are going to
catch on.
Just to repeat, democratic socialism purports to honor individual freedom, even though the state incrementally owns more and more of the means of production and therefore controls goods and services. And we see that right now where they're talking about we don't have the means by which to ship containers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because when COVID, I'm like, really? I mean, do you think we're that dumb? Come on, really? That during World War One and Two, they were shipping stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking, that was a major crisis that affected the world. And of course, when the U.S. stepped into World War Two, when they were bombed in Pearl Harbor, we were isolated up until that point.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we were still being very productive as a country.
Mm.
So even though we had this pandemic or COVID, to me, that was an excuse for the government to do what it wanted to implement to do in the first place and the move they're going to. So still today, why aren't they shipping containers? Hmm. Why do we see such shortages of in the markets, in department stores, clothing, everything else? You're going to still use that excuse that we have a shortage, although according to the CDC and WHO, the pandemic is done, right?
So no legitimate explanations given.
No.
Yeah,
and now there's like, well, we don't have to say nothing because nobody's asking questions. Well, yeah, people are asking questions. Why are the shelves still empty and bare in many of our stores? Mm. Or why things continue to escalate price-wise?
Yeah.
Well, there's a shortage. No, it's not a shortage.
Yeah. Yeah. And so over time, the questioning kind of will simmer down.
Exactly.
And then people will begin to just adjust and
that
becomes the norm.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. Well, nobody's saying nothing anything now, so let's just move on to the next
Nothing's next agenda. Changed, so this is the new normal, and the new normal comes and goes, and then there's another new normal, and I think, it's so purposeful in its design, right, where it happens incrementally, because if it were to be, you know, an overnight sort of change, this would not fly with
lot
of people.
And the thing that's really interesting, and I talked about, and we talked about this before, once the COVID thing, and of course Trump's out of office, where's Fauci now?
Mm.
To me,
retired.
The government got what they wanted from him.
Yeah.
Right? And now that they got what they wanted from him as far as his expert analysis on COVID, now that he's done, he's like, okay, dude, we don't need you anymore. You know, you don't hear about him anymore. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have any say whether now you got monkeypox, all these other variants that are other viruses that are out there. If he's the world's leading authority on viruses, is that right? Why don't you hear nothing from him anymore? He was a political pawn. That's why I look at it. He was a political pawn. Yeah. And now that everything is kind of settled down more so, quote unquote, they say the pandemic is over. Biden said the same thing, our president. So what happened to Fauci?
Yeah.
They got what they wanted from him to cause this stir of allowing the government to shut everything down under his, recommendation. It's crazy.
I've never seen that in my lifetime until then.
Oh, no, never.
This one guy you know, had so much say in the direction of a nation. And he's not even the president. Like, nope. He's not even, you know, nope. The highest person.
Can you, you think about it. When has our country ever in its history went into complete isolation economically?
Yep.
Not even during World War II, dude, that happened. Yeah. It's man, I tell you, it's scary to see what's going on.
Well, let's just talk about climate change real quickly here. Sure. And then I think this is all the time we have for today. But he says two reasons, right, on page 185.
Mm-hmm.
Two reasons the radical secularists are so adamant about climate change. The first is because of the Marxist notion that capitalism is oppressive and exploits nature, making the world unlivable. They say that all of nature is equally sacred. How's about that one? And this explains why the secularists who are most bent on promoting abortion are also refusing to allow a pipeline to be built, namely the Keystone Pipeline, right? Because it will disturb the habitat of insects and animals. But go and kill all the babies you want.
Like, yep. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's so oxymoron in their theology and their belief. The thing about it, we talked about this, you know, it first was, like you mentioned under Gore, global warming, right?
Yeah.
But then that didn't fit the perspective because that wasn't the case. So now they changed the terminology from global warming to climate change, which to me, that's even doesn't fit the situation as well.
Yeah.
I mean, are we facing climate change? Yeah, we are. I mean, let's face it, we are. But the bottom line is, who controls all of that? God.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm at. God controls everything. So we see, even now today, we had Hurricane Ian, we had Hurricane Fiona, we had Typhoon Noru that went through the Philippines and headed toward Vietnam. But God's in control of all of that, of the weather. He's in control. And for me, my own perspective, and He's sending warning.
Yeah.
I look at God is sending warning.
There's a greater climate change coming.
Yeah, I mean, like, wake up. I mean, you know, when you study history, Israel's history, all the warnings that God sent through the prophets about what's coming, the fact that they were stiff-necked, worshiping pagan gods, sacrificing their own kids, right, to Molech, and God was sending warning. You guys need to stop doing this stuff. Of course, and we know what happened. You know, the nation split because it couldn't get along. And they both went to captivity, Babylonians and Assyrians. But God gave them decades of warning to change through righteous kings, and they never listened. Mm. And I look at America, and I look at this is one way God is trying to wake up the nation, but nobody's listening. You know, they're looking at, oh, Mother Nature. Well, guess what? Who's in control of God? I mean, go back and study our roots as a country. We are a Judeo-Christian nation. Well, we were. And our roots were deeply in that perspective, but now we don't have God in anything anymore, which is like Amgram Marlatz when I played a little clip.
Yeah,
I mean, that was powerful.
Yeah,
and she brought us some very, very pointed thoughts about where we're going as a country, and that to me is scary to think about the possibility of where America could end up on God's economy of things within the next maybe 5 years. You know, will God remove his hand of grace from America and say, like Romans 1, I'm just going to give you over to a reprobate mind.
Mm.
In other words, a mind that is so seared, you can't even listen to God anymore.
Mm.
And I think we're getting near to that, that place. The church will always prevail. We know that. So we don't want to be, you know, being doom and gloom because the gates of hell will never prevail against the church. And, you know, for us here on staff, we will never bow. You know, we will never bow to secularism because that's not how we are made. We're Christians and we will fight to the death for what we believe. But the point is that how many innocent people are going to suffer? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Needlessly, simply because of the fact that we just don't want to repent. You know, that's the thing that bothers me so much today. It's not the unbeliever, but the church.
Mm.
You know, how messed up the church has become. It just bothers me. You know, I've been 43 years as a Christian, and I never thought I'd see the church in this condition. Mm. I mean, we're failing our mission and why it was established. I mean, I hate to say that. Not all churches. Thank God for good pastors out there that are holding the line, Mosa Calvary's, John MacArthur, Dr. Charles Stanley, David Jeremiah. There's many that are non-Christians or non-Calvary's that are doing a great work out there.
Sure.
But they've been along for around for decades.
Yeah.
What about the third generation and fourth generation guys coming up today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is their theology today?
And, you know, it's funny. I was talking with one of the guys, and we'll end here. We'll hit the second point, but then we'll close.
Sure.
And, yeah, one of our drummers, Scotty, a couple weeks ago, I just was talking to him, and I asked him, hey, can I ask you something? Is there anyone that comes to mind that could potentially be, and I think I might have asked Ronell this too, or Jared, is if we can think of any voice within, you know, the Christian circles or the churches today who can really be a trusted voice or a trusted person when it comes to presenting God's word to this next generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the great preachers and teachers that we know, they're only getting older.
Yep.
So who's coming? Who's God raising up for next generation to be a voice for them? I'm not to say that, you know, those guys from the previous generations are will no longer be able to relate or anything like that. I think, you know, the message is still obviously relevant, but the approach, the voice, and I think even to the age, right?
Yep.
Being someone who's a little bit more on the youthful side,
a little bit more relevant,
little bit more culturally relevant in a sense. You know, who comes to mind? And we're over here. We're struggling to find even just one guy, you know, under the age of, you know, 45, 50, who could be a trusted voice for this generation. You have a lot of these hip pastors, but man, are they really trustworthy?
Yeah.
Or have they compromised in some areas? I mean, we have already seen with you know, Hillsong, unfortunately. Yep. Pastor Carl Lentz, but you know, anyone for this next generation, we need godly men to step up to the plate. It's funny because in thinking about this, it's like there's a few ladies that come to mind, female, you know, teachers, but you know, where's the guys at?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately, you know, we know. It's the women that always step forward when there's a need in the church, and the men, where the men should be taking the lead role and advocating, filling spots that are needed to be filled in volunteer services. But there's one person that comes to mind that I think that can be a voice for the younger kids, and that's Charlie Kirk. I really do. He's young. He's knowledgeable. He's solid in his theology. He knows his stuff. And also what's going on in the culture. So to me, he could be the next voice.
Yeah.
Because he goes to college campuses. He doesn't debate. What he does is he listens to their questions that are anti-government or anti-Christian, and he always has a solid answer in return. He's very good. I watched him the other day.
Yeah.
And I love Charlie Kerr. I would love to see him come out here and talk. And I think he's the next up-and-coming guy on the horizon that is well-rounded and maybe the next apologist, you know, that because he's young and God, he's raised in a Christian family. You know, he said he got saved when he was really young. But obviously he has some really good roots, and he's done his due diligence, you know, and I give that guy credit. And he's very... very soft, but yet very easy in his approach. So in other words, when he talks, you can understand everything he says. I would love to get him out here.
Yeah,
he's to me the like the one person that would come to mind.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, there's guys like another person that I think that could really be used and is being used by God in a neat way with the young generation is Ryan Reese with the Whosoevers.
Yeah,
he's really solid. He doesn't back down. He's very relatable because of his mannerisms. And this to his presentation of the gospel. I was watching him at the pastor's conference. He's one of the speakers there, and he's, you know, he talks the language. So when he teaches, he's teaching with that language of the culture that he ministers to. but he's very powerful, mm-hmm. and he draws a huge crowd of young kids because he's very relatable, and yeah. because of his lifestyle, the life he used to live. So there's a connection that he has, what he used to do, the lifestyle he was caught up in, the money, everything. He's a skateboarder even today.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids, they just gravitate to him, but his message, like his dad, is very powerful. Yeah. So he's another young guy. He's not young. He's in his, I think he's in his 40s now, but he's still a good person that God is using in a very neat way.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's you're right though. You're absolutely right. You know,
few and far between.
Yeah, yep. We need more men need to step to the plate and like, you know, Isaiah, after he realized how his sinfulness and mm-hmm. God cleansed him, and he said, you know, when God said, who's going to go? Who will go for us? He said, hey, send me. You know, here I am. Send me. And we need more guys to have that type of mentality today, mm-hmm. and step, in other words, step up by faith and be used of God. You know?
Amen.
Yeah.
Well, we will continue this next week. That second reason for they advocate for climate change is because why? It's going to send trillions of dollars their way, giving the government more control over the economy, and we'll talk more about it next week.
Yes. Kind of didn't get off the track. I think we shared a lot of practical stuff today.
Yeah.
You know, things that were, I think, heartfelt. That's what I enjoy about this program. It's unshaken, but it's also unscripted. You know, we just, mm-hmm. whatever God lays upon our hearts. And, we don't want to go off the script of our chapter. Mm-hmm. I don't think we did that, but I think we shared a lot of things from what I got from you and I today, just from the heart.
Yeah.
A lot of things that came from the heart. And our concerns, because we love America, you know, we love God, mm-hmm. we love people. And we want to see them, prosper all the way around, you know.
Yeah. And always looking forward to the times when we get to talk about in each chapter the response.
Yes.
You know, what should the church's response be to each and every situation and issue that arises? Yep. So good stuff today. Yeah.
Yes, good, John.
Let's go ahead and pray. I'll pray for us.
Sure.
And we'll call it a day. Father, we thank you today for your love and mm-hmm. your grace. And we know that you are faithful,
mm-hmm.
that your steadfast love endures forever, and you are in control of our world, of our country, mm-hmm. our state and city, all the way down to our very beings, Lord, as people. So we trust you. Mm-hmm. We ask that you would continue to guide us, Lord, in these last days. We know that the heart of man is growing darker and the love of man growing cold, mm-hmm. as your word says. So help us to be bright lights for you, to speak truth and to speak it in love.
Yes, Lord.
With speech that is seasoned with salt and mm-hmm. grace. And we give you all the glory.
Yes.
And we ask that you continue to do the work in us and through us and bless those who listen.
Yes, Lord, God.
Would you continue to work through them as well?
Mm-hmm.
And we praise you. We give you all the glory in Jesus' Lord. Name. Amen.
Amen.
All right.
All right. Next week.
Take care.
God bless you. Go for God.
Go for God.